Mr. Post, good morning to you.
May it please the court, the district court has a series of three primary errors that I'm going to address today in turn. First, it went beyond the scope of directions of remand. Second, it considered new issues that were not part of the underlying administrative action. And third, it received evidence in an APA review, which is two. Concerning the first error, this court, now 2 years ago, issued clear directions on remand that, and this was because this is what the petition for review requested, that the waiver services be reinstated. The court, the district court later entered an order spreading that mandate, directing the Department of Health and Human Services to do so, and then the department did. Later, the appellate or the appellee comes in and asks for something more.
And would you concede that it was error for the Department of Health and Human Services to have terminated the benefits to the child?
That's no longer a dispute that this court's opinion 2 years ago resolved that issue.
So could the mother seek remuneration for the expenses that she incurred as a result of this termination?
Absolutely, but I do need to distinguish. There's two types of expenses here, as you see in the brief. There's the first type of expenses that related to the petition for review. The department agrees 100%.
These are the child care expenses?
Yes, mostly. It's about $45,000.
Right, okay.
There's no dispute on that. The department's willing to pay, and it's my understanding that about $5,000 of those have been paid up until this point. But there's still more to pay, and there's a dispute. What the issue was, the district judge went beyond those and tried to add in a new issue that wasn't part of that original proceeding. It also gets to my second time of error. The HIP program, as you're seeing in the brief, is a completely separate program. It's a separate administrative action. The applicant testified that she received a separate notice and had an opportunity to have a hearing and then appeal from that, but she never did it. And at that point, that issue was not before the district court to review because it was conducted in the administrative proceeding. And the district court, in its order, even admits that this issue is not in front of it, but it goes beyond the directions of the anyway. Counsel,
so you're saying that if the department, this court previously found the department was wrong in the termination, so you're saying that the consequences of that wrongful action, there is no remedy?
A couple things. There is absolutely a remedy if the department was not paying the expenses that the department's been ordered to pay up until this point. Various ways that issue could be raised. That's not what we have.
For example?
Offhand, they could maybe file contempt, something to ask the district court to seek enforcement of the order that
Would that be the equivalent of where we find ourselves?
No, because they didn't do so. And again, from the initial filing here, once we're back at the district court, the department's saying, we're ready to pay. We're ready to pay. The judge finds that they're ready to pay, and now, as this has been pending, the department's paid $5,000 of the $45,000. What they want is something more, and that's why we're here.
How does one wrongly denied of the benefits commence to get reimbursed for the consequential expenses of having been wrongly denied?
Sure. Well, the consequential expenses, so that are not tied to this administrative action, they would have filed an appeal, ask for a hearing first, see what the department says, and then appeal that, and then it's hypothetically possible that both of those
a separate new event. Is that what you're saying? Because this exceeded the remand. Were consequential expenses anticipated by the remand?
No. The remand says to reinstate the waiver services. So that's exactly what it says, and that's what the department did. It doesn't say remand for further proceedings.
Not all this stuff that develops when services are wrongly denied.
You know, I understand the situation they're in, but they didn't appeal a completely separate action. They're asking to benefit from a successful appeal of one action on the second action that didn't appeal.
Counsel, if the department still doesn't pay for these other damages that you say we're here on, do you believe that the mother has a right to institute another administrative appeal on those same damages?
Not at this point, so she's out of time.
When exactly should that, according to your theory, when exactly, time-wise, should that appeal have occurred?
Sure, so she gets two denial letters. They should have, roughly the same time under the APA, they should have asked for the hearing in front of the department and appealed from that denial, if it was denied, to the district court. And I'm assuming here, but I would think those two issues would get joined together on an appeal got up to this court. But because she let the second issue go, it's not in front of the district court or this court. And if there are no further questions, we ask that the district court's order be reversed.
Just a second. The $45,000 is in daycare expenses, is that correct?
Sure. I can't remember if there's another thing in there, mostly daycare expenses.
Okay. And that's being paid back, agreed to be paid back by the department?
Absolutely.
And part of it's been paid back, part of it's now stopped because of this appeal? Or
no, it's not. So, and I can't tell you exactly what's been paid back. The department told me it was already that approximately $5,000 have been paid.
How long has this remand been out there?
Since shortly after the order in 2008.
So why has it taken a year and a half to pay back $5,000 and the $45,000?
But honestly, because they haven't submitted the paperwork.
The
appellee and the providers. Under this system for the waiver services for Medicaid, the providers need to submit the information. Department's promise to expedite those requests if they would say they can't pay.
Counsel, what's the incentive for the providers to do anything? They've already got their money.
Is it required to under Medicaid?
They're what?
They're required to under Medicaid, otherwise they'd receive a windfall.
Is that their problem or is that your problem?
I mean, both. It could be both. I mean, we have a practical problem where if we're ordered to pay both and somebody's getting a windfall here. There are issues.
Prior to the time that this action was commenced, had the department done anything?
Okay, so the action commenced after the mandate, is that what you're
referring right.
to? Right. Had the department paid anything? No.
Following the mandate, the department did nothing.
Following the mandate, the department was in contact with, I believe, Appley's attorney, and said, we're willing to pay, this is how you do it, send us your paperwork, let's get the ball rolling. And so they did everything they could, and we discussed this numerous times in the district court. If at any point from the mandate to today, if the appellee or the providers had taken that action, then we wouldn't be here on that issue.
Who's going to make the providers do this? You say that they have to. Well, there's a lot of people that have to, but who's actually going to make them? Is the department going to call them up and say, you need to get this paperwork in, or are you saying that the mother has to go back to each provider and she tries to force them to do it?
I don't have a citation for you on that, but it's my understanding that the mother needs to ask these providers, especially because they're daycare providers. These are not necessarily typical.
Where do you get the authority that the mother has to do anything? Hasn't the department been directed to do something?
Correct. The department's been directed to reinstate the waiver services. Under the waiver program, department is according to Medicaid. This is
under the waiver service program, she gets daycare aid as long as it doesn't exceed the cost of institutionalizing the child. So, and at that time, she also, under the waiver services, is eligible for health care benefits or health care insurance that would cover the additional cost of health care to this child.
Yeah, I do want to separate. Those are two separate issues because the HIP program is an election made by the department. It's not an automatic thing under the waiver program. Now, in this instance, the department did make that election.
Did the mother incur those costs?
I have no reason to dispute that they incurred the costs.
Had she not been terminated, she wouldn't have had those costs at all?
We don't know that, and just to briefly wrap up, that's The issue is before the court, there might be evidence on these things, but because there's not, that's the reason why it's required.
The wrongful termination of the benefits did not include the health care benefits?
No, well, at least not the petition for review. So again, that goes back to how it's two separate actions. So if you look at the transcript, and I don't have a citation in front of me, but the petition for review specifically requests reinstatement of waiver services. It doesn't request anything about the HIP program. So that's why we have this narrow focus.
Thank you very much, Mr. Joyce. Good morning to you.
May it please the court, Andrew Joyce on behalf of the Appalachian MRUP. Your Honors, the last 4 years, my client is, and her daughter has essentially been living a living nightmare, and a lot of it has been caused by a lot of bureaucratic errors on behalf of the department. Now, as the court might recall, we were here in May of 2015. Gabby suffers from debilitating syndrome called Coffin-Lowry syndrome, which significant inhibitions on a lot of her functions of daily life, and which require that she meets a what's called a nursing facility level of care, which was touched on in that last proceeding. But essentially, under that nursing facility level of care, when you reach that under Medicaid, there are a couple of things that you can receive as a beneficiary of that. One of which is the you can participate in the waiver services program, and under that waiver services program, some of those benefits that you receive is Medicaid will still cover your medical costs, but they'll also cover some child care costs so that the parents can essentially return to the workplace. And so as one distinction that I want to make is that while the HIP program, which has been discussed quite a bit in this case, it doesn't create a duty to reimburse medical expenses. That duty had already been there through the nursing facility level of care and the waiver services programs. Essentially what that HIP program did is said, well, we, Medicaid, have a duty already to pay your medical expenses, but instead of paying those medical providers directly, we're going to have you go out and get private health insurance, and we're going to we're just going to pay your health insurance premiums because we, Medicaid, determined that it's going to be more cost-effective to do it that way. So that's, I think that's an important distinction to make, that, and I think the affidavit received by the court shows that the expenses that we're seeking to reimburse, the majority of which are child care expenses, but some of which are out-of-pocket medical expenses that were received in addition to, or were incurred in addition to the health insurance premiums. Now,
counsel,
sure.
Opposing counsel argues that this was a specific remand by this court in 2015. Not a general remand where it says further proceedings consistent with this opinion. It was a specific remand. The court spread that mandate on its record appropriately. How do we get around that to expand that remand? That you're asking us to do that. How do we do that?
And Your Honor, I would argue that we're not asking to expand the remand by any means. The remand specifically states that that the waiver services would be reinstated with the effective date of November 11, 2012. And what's interesting is that it doesn't specifically say that, and as part of it, that Medicaid has to reimburse these expenses.
But what jurisdiction, can you cite to us that the court had to do anything other than a ministerial act of simply spreading the mandate? What jurisdiction did the court have?
Well, I think that what it essentially was, what this case is about, is construing that mandate and essentially the whether or not the terms of the mandate had been followed, had been adhered to.
Wouldn't that be a contempt action, though, not a motion to determine expenses?
Right, and I think those two could be under the, I'm sure it could have been filed under that. That title, and I think we probably get back to the same point as to where we are right now, is that essentially over, you know, when this mandate was issued in shortly after the May 2015 opinion of this court, the department had a duty to reinstate those benefits effective November 11, 2012. I think that's an important distinction, is that the court could have just said reinstate Medicaid waiver services benefits and gone about it. But I think that inherent in the decision to say that it's retroactive to the 2012 date puts an implicit duty to basically reimburse or
put the parties where they would have been.
Right, exactly.
And at the time, November 2012, what services were being rendered or paid for by the department?
So essentially, the child's mother was providing in-home care, and there was a heavy of services, medical and child care services, that were being given to the minor child because she was severely impacted by this mental disability and physical limitation.
Was the HIP program in place at that point?
It was.
Okay. So they were reimbursing her for medical health insurance premiums?
Yeah, correct.
So at that time they were doing that. Were they paying for out-of-pocket expenses?
I don't have that information.
They're paying for daycare?
Yes.
So when the remand says go back to reinstate what services were rendered, those services would have been in place at that time?
They would have. And, Your Honor, what I think is important is that had this Medicare waiver services been in place, and never suspended as of November of 2012, then we wouldn't have had any of the following impediments that my client incurred. And specifically, had the 2012 termination never happened, my client would have never incurred all these child care costs, which the state doesn't contend they owe.
So, but for the wrongful termination, she would not have incurred these expenses?
Correct. And in addition, the state doesn't contend that the sole basis for the later termination of the health insurance premium program was that she wasn't eligible for Medicaid. Well, she wasn't eligible for Medicaid due to the November 2012 termination. So these are all direct and proximate effects that stem from that point. And, so essentially I think that this court anticipated in its 2015 order that certain expenses would have been incurred up to this point.
And so that's implicit in what we said?
I believe it is. Otherwise, the order to set the retroactive date to 2012, essentially, I don't know if that serves any other purpose, if not to make my client whole or reset her to the position that she would have been had the termination ever occurred.
Counsel, the district court in this case never acted as a trial court. It was acting at all times as an intermediate appellate court under the APA. Isn't that correct?
That is correct.
So wasn't it your obligation to go make your factual record about this problem at the agency level and appeal from that?
I don't believe so, because I think that at this point the district court still had jurisdiction over the mandate, and essentially the construction of that mandate and whether the mandate was being complied with.
Well, the words mean what we said, don't they?
They do.
The district court didn't get to interpret them to mean something that it thought was implied.
Of course not.
So I still don't understand why you didn't make your record at the agency and take it back to the district court in a new proceeding.
Well, because I still think, though, that the law is clear that construction of a mandate and essentially adherence to that mandate would be something that the district court would preside over. And I think that essentially what the state's position is they acknowledge that they haven't paid, aside from the $5,000, which I can't verify. I'd never heard of that before.
If the district court was acting as a trial court, I'd be inclined to agree with you on that. But do you have any authority that the district court, as an intermediate appellate court under the APA, retains some jurisdiction after it's spread the mandate and ordered the agency to do what was directly ordered by this court?
I haven't seen a specific case that addresses it, Your Honor, but I think that it's inherent with the process of the mandate that if the district court is issuing the mandate, spreading the mandate, that they have the jurisdiction.
Would the district court, having been directed by this court to do something, have had the authority to say, I don't have the record to do what I'm directed to do?
Arguably they would.
Or direct it down to an agency level? Would they have had the authority in this case?
I don't have the authority for me, but I think that they would if that were the case. But I think that ultimately, and I see that I'm out of time, but ultimately if the court doesn't have that authority, then there's nothing in place to require that the state comply with any order or any mandate under the APA on appeal. Essentially, they can blatantly disregard any order from the court, and we can't offer any evidence or show the court that anything has been violated or not complied with, then essentially it's going to result in a detrimental effect.
That's an argument of futility, but how do you show us that it would have been futile to do so in front of the agency?
That which would have been futile.
To make your record of their failure to comply with what was ordered to be done.
Well, I think that still the district court was presiding over that mandate, and they were spreading the mandate, so they had the authority, or they had the jurisdiction over compliance with that. And with that, I would submit if there was
a little circular.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Our next case of the morning is Farmers Cooperative versus State of Nebraska, which is consolidated for argument with Frontier Cooperative Company versus State of Nebraska. Justice Stacy is also recused in this matter. Mm-hmm.